Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a loaded Tuesday. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. The Queen Charlotte Flair in 45 minutes. Brady Papinga, Rick Bucher, Mark Medina, who does a great job covering the NBA, and Joy Taylor joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited for you. You've been talking about getting Charlotte Flair on the show for a long time now.
Charlotte Flair owns the internet. She is a radiant beauty. She is the star of the WWE, and I used to make fun of forever. I watched it as a kid growing up. I made fun of their fans. She's a rock star, so she's going to stop by our show. I've been trying for a year to get her on the show, so she's coming on the show today. It'll be fun. So I want to start, Joy, with this. One of the things that a lot of people use the term woke, and I prefer the term purity. I think Twitter and social media is kind of a BS 24/7 purity test. None of us are perfect. All of us are flawed. Get over it. Stop rushing to social media because somebody else had a bad tweet. If you only have one bad tweet in your life, you've lived a hell of a life. We have bad days. I've had bad segments. I've had bad sentences. I've had bad... Life isn't perfect. It's not a purity test. Be nice. Treat people like you'd like to be treated. The rest of the Bible's commentary. I don't care about it. Just be a nice person. None of us are perfect. And I saw yesterday, Tua, he's the quarterback at Alabama, has got some medical issues. Well, what do you know? His three-month CT scan on his fractured hip was positive. He's got a healed hip. Now, he still has to wait another month to get cleared for football activities, but the first test for Tua, who's been banged up in college, is good. His hip is good. I would take him number one, but let's not talk about number one. Let's talk about this. I hear a lot of this about Tua. Well, college guys that get hurt, they always get hurt in the NFL. Let me ask you, do you think the Philadelphia Eagles regret signing Carson Wentz, who was hurt in college? Do you think the Houston Texans regret drafting Deshaun Watson, who was hurt in college? I don't. Well, what about RG3? He was cruddy. It wasn't his injuries. It was his injuries, and he wasn't very good. That's why he's a backup. The injuries didn't end RG3. He wasn't any good. He's a backup. He's probably a star in the XFL. It wasn't the injuries. Carson Wentz is hurt. Deshaun Watson's hurt. Mahomes has been hurt. Aaron Rodgers is hurt. Matt Stafford's hurt. This idea, you're looking for a perfect quarterback. They don't exist. They don't exist. Aaron Rodgers, you've been telling me for a decade, he's the best thing since sliced bread. He got a coach fired. He's had one great season. It's been massive drama. He can be a tenuous leader. Green Bay's relevant, aren't they? Every time I look at the Vegas Super Bowl odds, Green Bay's top five. You think they regret drafting Aaron Rodgers? Do you think Houston regrets drafting Deshaun Watson? Do you think Philadelphia regrets drafting Carson Wentz? The reason RG3 and Sam Bradford, it wasn't the injuries. They weren't good enough. They were just guys. Bradford was fine, but he's a guy. He's not carrying a team. RG3's not carrying a team. If you're the Chargers, if you're the Dolphins, if you're the Colts, let me ask you them. Is Tua better than the guy you got? Boom, I'm in. I draft him. I go 3-4 years on him. By year two or three, if he's all banged up, I draft somebody else. But this kid's a once in a life. Have you ever seen his college stats? 22-2. Well, that's Alabama. 87 touchdowns, 11 picks. 69% completion rate. He got better every year. Leadership, coachable. I've never seen college stats like this. 87 touchdowns and 11 picks. That's like video game crap. And that's in the SEC, which easily has the best defenses in college football. I mean, it's the only conference where you got seven NFL guys every Saturday on defense. He ate it alive. He got better every year. And let me tell you something. Let's say I'm the Chargers, and I draft Tua wherever you draft him or Miami. And I know going in, he's only going to start 12 to 13 games a year for 5 years. I'd still take him. Because I think he's special enough to win 8 or 9 of those 12 or 13. So all I need is a competent backup to win one more game. Boom, I win my division. If he wins 9 out of 13 games a year and misses 3 games a year, I just need a competent backup, which, by the way, in 2020 in the NFL, there's a ton of competent backups. I mean, Gardner Minshew came out of nowhere. The guy's all over the country playing quarterback now. It's just this purity BS 24/7 stuff. You're all looking for perfection. It doesn't exist. Andrew Luck and John Elway are the only college quarterbacks in my life that came out, and I couldn't nitpick them. I mean, that's about the only two guys you're like, smart, big arm, work hard, coachable, can move a little bit. That's it. Two guys, history of my life, 4 decades of watching the NFL draft, 2 quarterbacks. Who gives a rip if a guy is hurt in college? Is he going to add juice to your franchise? What do the Chargers need today? They need energy. They need juice. What's Carolina need? Juice. They got a new owner. He wants juice. He wants to sell tickets. What's Indianapolis need? Energy. They're kind of flat. Jacoby Brissett's a nice kid. It's just kind of boring. So whenever I hear about this, well, you know, he got hurt in college. It's football. After week 4, everybody's banged up. All I know is if Tua could start 12 games a year for me, if I'm the Chargers, the Colts, Carolina, Miami, I get 12 to 13 starts. That kid's winning 8 to 9. Give me a competent backup who can win one more game, and I'm winning my division 9 out of 10 years, as long as, you know, Patrick Mahomes may screw it up a little bit. But hey, you're telling me the Chargers, Tua's not going to change the franchise? I think you're nuts. He got cleared yesterday. He's my number one pick. He's special. I've never seen a college quarterback with numbers like his ever, and he did it in the SEC. Auburn, Georgia, LSU, Florida. I mean, everybody just defense, defense, defense every week. All right, let me shift to this. I just read a story this morning where if you have an optimistic partner in life, that it's, you live longer. So cynicism is not great for long life. If you have an optimistic husband, optimistic wife, it can even take a cranky person and extend life. Listen, in sports, a lifetime is like 15 years. Brady and Belichick have lived like 2 lifetimes by NFL standards. One of the signs you can tell that this puppy now is not great is they're both privately complaining about each other. So there's a story that Robert Kraft wants the Patriots and Tom Brady to, quote, see what's out there in free agency. There's another story that says Robert Kraft, quote, you know what I want. You know what's happened here is that Robert Kraft was in Brady's corner, and Robert Kraft has gone back to being a businessman, which means he's sort of in Belichick's corner because Belichick's got 10 more years to coach and Brady's got about 2 years to play. But what's really happened in this relationship is what you don't want to happen in non-football relationships. Both Belichick and New England are privately complaining about Brady, and Brady, I've been told, is privately complaining about New England. This is how you and I don't want to end at 60, 70 years old. Privately complaining about our partner, which is why this puppy's got about a year left. I know New England's complaining about Brady. How do I know it? Because I saw an article 2 years ago with Seth Wickersham on ESPN, the magazine, where there were multiple anonymous quotes saying Brady's a system quarterback and the coaches in New England think many guys could win here. That was not exactly a subtle shot at Brady inside the room. And then I also know that the New England people are banging on Brady because Tom's wife, and Tom let this end up in the documentary and he could have edited it out, Tom's saying to his wife, I don't feel respect here. Why? Because New England's privately complaining about him and some of it's getting to Tom. And how do I know Tom's complaining about New England? I'll write a book about it someday, but I've got it well sourced. He's complaining about New England. And also because Tom Curran, the most connected writer in Boston, was on our show yesterday and talked about things that I'm hearing. And I don't know if Tom and I are hearing them from the same people, but he's the most well-connected Patriot guy I know. And he's hearing what I'm hearing about Brady and his misgivings about New England.
It's about this, very simply, Colin. He wants to get to the line, be under center or in shotgun in 2020, and look across at the defense and say, you know what? I got an app for that. I got a guy here, I got a guy there. I know we can execute on this play that's going to work. And he hasn't really felt that way the last 2 years. So it hasn't been a lot of fun offensively. So it's not about the money. It's about the opportunity to enjoy the football, to enjoy the offensive side of things, to not have to throw it away six times a game or run for his life or not know exactly where his receivers are going to be. So that is the surrounding cast is as important or more important than the money.
Okay, so that's exactly what I'm hearing. Tom's complaining, but this my point is that what you want to end up in life is that you're optimistic, you go home every night, you have a good dinner, you have good laughs. Optimism extends life. This is now officially in New England a relationship where both parties are privately nagging about the other, meaning ideally they should break up, but realistically, there's not a great market for either. New England doesn't have a backup plan, and Brady on the free agent market is not a hot commodity outside of maybe one or two teams. It's an ugly, cranky relationship. This is not the way you and I want to end, but it's the reality of this. Even Bob Kraft, Brady's biggest supporter, is quoted now twice saying, "You know what I want. You know what I want, but it's probably best, Tom, test the free agent market." Listen, this is two lifetimes in the NFL. It's two different dynasties. This is not where you want to be. Robert Kraft has removed himself. It's back to business. They're both privately bickering. Tom's not a hot free agent. New England would rather replace him but has no plan. Welcome to a good football team going forward, but no longer a Super Bowl contender.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Nostalgia is a very powerful thing. Years and years ago, I think I can tell this story now and get nobody in trouble. Urban Meyer was a young football coach. And he had coached under Lou Holtz at Notre Dame. And then Urban Meyer left Notre Dame and he went to Bowling Green. And then he went to Utah and he was the hot coach in the country. And Notre Dame wanted to hire Urban Meyer. And Florida, the Gators, wanted to hire Urban Meyer. Now, Urban is of my age when Florida was irrelevant in football when we were growing up and Notre Dame was everything. And nostalgia is really powerful. You know, the sports you like at 9 are the ones you mostly like the rest of your life. You know what I mean? So Urban Meyer was now up for the Notre Dame job and the Florida job. But Lou Holtz, so he called Lou Holtz, and he said, "Lou, what should I do?" And Lou Holtz said, "Take Florida. You can get anybody into Florida. That's just a factory of football guys. Notre Dame, you got academics, you got the weather, it's a small town, it turns some recruits off." Nostalgia would make you believe Notre Dame is the better job, but Urban knew and Lou knew. In college football in the last 10 years, you got to get players. You in Florida gets players. And so Urban took the Florida job and won a national title because he didn't let nostalgia overwhelm him. And let me talk about Joel Embiid. If you look at most guys running NBA teams, they're 45, 48, 49. They grew up in a league with Jabbar and Kareem and Shaq and Hakeem. And they grew up in an era of centers. And so every time they do that anonymous poll, that executive poll in the NBA every year, who would you build your franchise around? You ever notice it's all centers? Oh, yeah, I love centers. Why do we keep talking about centers? It's over. There's only one center in the league I like. It's in Denver, and he's a point center because he passes. 18 NBA teams played last night. You know who had the most assists? The center for Denver. Jokic, he's the one guy I like because he's not a true center. He passes. He makes everybody better. Jokic makes everybody better. That's the center I like. The reality is Embiid gets way too much press. If you go back to the last Shaq title with the Lakers, the 18 years since then, there is no true center that has won a title. You could say Tim Duncan won three. Tim Duncan's considered the greatest power forward of all time. Kevin Garnett won with Boston, but he was a forward. Dirk Nowitzki's 6'11". He may look like a center, but he's a three. It's a Kawhi league, a LeBron league. It's a Steph league. It's a Durant league. It was the late Kobe league. Is everybody watching what's happening to the NBA right now? Don't get me. There's a difference between size and centers. Giannis, I love Giannis. He's not a center. I love Anthony Davis. He has said publicly, I hate playing center. Don't get me wrong. Size matters. But a lot of these guys, now Embiid's a good free throw shooter, so you can have him late in games. A lot of these centers aren't. But we spend so much time talking about Embiid. Philadelphia did something called the process, and it was rebuilding their franchise. If you go look at what the process was, essentially we're going to draft the tallest guy available. It was built on size. They haven't done anything. By the way, the Miami Heat and the Golden State Warriors are the last two dynasties in this league. They didn't have real centers. Kayvon Looney, Joel Anthony, Udonis Haslam. They were big. They had size. They weren't really back-to-back centers, back-to-the-basket centers. I mean, I like Embiid. I think he's fun. I think he's, a baby Shaq talented. But the league is changing. Damian Lillard now can control the game. Steph Curry controls the game. Look at Ja Morant. Ja Morant in an hour has turned around Memphis. Why? He's got the ball in his hands. He's creating for himself. He's creating for others. Ja Morant has taken a bad roster, and overnight in the West, they're a playoff team today. So it's nothing again. I can acknowledge Joel Embiid's talent. But the center in the league, to me, that's the future, is the kid in Denver, who's got a bad body. Last night took eight shots and ended up with 13 assists and 10 rebounds and 15 points. Highly efficient, elevates everybody. You just don't watch the Denver Nuggets. I don't watch much of the Denver Nuggets. You get into that mountain time zone, Albuquerque, Salt Lake, Denver. The TV schedule's all messed up. I watch a lot of Jazz games because I ski a lot. I don't see a lot of Denver. Last year I watched them seven quarters before the playoffs started. But we're all in this Embiid thing. I'm sorry. That's not the future of the league. It's not winning championships. We're going to have, at the end of this year, we're going to have two forwards, Kawhi and Paul George with the Clippers. We're going to have Giannis a forward and Chris Middleton a forward for Milwaukee. We're going to have a foreign Anthony Davis and whatever LeBron is. He could be a point guard. He can be a three. Whatever you want to call LeBron. Controlling the playoffs. That's the NBA, wings and guards. We spend way too much time talking about Joel Embiid. Right now, he would open up the best pure center in the league. Y'all tell me it's Embiid. He would open up on the road in the Eastern Conference. That's your franchise? That's the guy you want to keep wasting time on? I said at the trading deadline, get a haul for him, build around Ben Simmons. I cannot believe how much time it's all nostalgia. Nostalgia is powerful. I'm done with back-to-back centers. I'm back to the basket dudes. If you can't pass, if you can't elevate others, I'm not interested.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Our next guest is officially, and there is no argument, the busiest person internationally in sports. Charlotte Flair is a 10-time WWE champion. Works 52 weeks a year. Let's bring the queen out. This is an interview we've been working on now for 9 months. Look at this. Do you know how lucky we are today? We love having you on the show. Obviously the daughter of the legendary Ric Flair. You are a rock star. People have no idea how the hours you put. Joy, yesterday I told Joy you were on the show today. She's like, you got to be kidding me. I have five guests a day.
The struggle is real. I know. Seriously.
I go to your event. I cannot believe the production. I can't believe your travel schedule. Just give somebody an average day for Charlotte Flair.
An average day. So I'm not shy about talking about our travel schedule. When I hear people say, oh, I have a flight, I'm like, I fly almost every single day. I'm usually on the road 5 days a week, and if I don't have appearances during the middle of the week, we fly into a city either on a Friday or a Saturday. We do a 1 hour to 4 hour drive to the next town, live event TVs Monday, or pay-per-view. And internationally, we do about 14 shows in a row, and that's all year round.
There is no off season.
Unless you're injured, so knock on wood, no.
And you are married to a professional wrestler.
Not married yet, engaged.
Oh, okay, so there's still
hope. Why I missed your birthday video. I had just gotten engaged. Mansuri messaged me and was like, can you send a happy birthday video to Colin? I was like, I missed it the week later, sorry. Okay. Happy late birthday.
Well, thank you, and as long as he treats you great, that's all we care about, Charlotte. Yes. So you are a rock star in a male-dominated sport. Okay, that's not easy. So you were really breaking ground. Go back to your first year. Did you sense pushback when you were being promoted? You were selling more tickets. You're getting much more social media play. Did you ever sense resentment?
No, I didn't sense resentment. If anything, I think we raised the bar for the men as well, like having competition. But since I was never raised to think that, okay, I couldn't do what, you know, what men could do. So when I started at WWE, I just wanted to prove how athletic I was. It was more the chip on my shoulder being Ric Flair's daughter. It's just, okay, I have to work harder than everyone, male or female. And then I think the boys actually were like, wow, the girls are really doing it. And then the guys that have little girls were like, okay, we want to bring our little girls to the show and see what you can do.
It's so
I didn't sense resentment.
You, by the way, were a volleyball player.
I was.
You didn't initially. It's not that you didn't embrace it, but you chose athletics. Give me the day, Charlotte, the moment you said, this wrestling thing is kind of interesting.
Well, I didn't grow up wanting to wrestle. My brothers, you know, wanted to be just like my dad. I just never saw myself as a diva or a model. And actually, it wasn't till WrestleMania in Miami when the Four Horsemen were inducted in 2012. One of the producers was trying to get my little brother in the business and get him motivated. So he looked at me at dinner and was like, why aren't you doing this? And I was just kind of like, I don't know. And I wasn't really doing a lot with my life. I'd already graduated from college. I was a little lost. And 3 months later, I reported to NXT in Tampa, July 2012. And the rest is history.
And like, when did you know? And I think I asked Hulk Hogan this once. I said, when did you know you hit with the consumers? And he talked about, he goes, you know, I was popular, and then I went to Madison Square Garden. He goes, I couldn't walk down the street. When did you know, Charlotte, wow, the audience? Because it should be noted that the consumers, the wrestling fans, about 75% of the stars don't pop. You popped early. When did you know?
I think it was in 2015 when I debuted on Raw. I think people were like, wow, she's just a good wrestler. She wasn't
physical.
Known for her looks. I mean, or I wasn't known for my looks.
Yeah, you're pretty good there too, so go ahead.
No, but it was like, I mean, here is this woman that, like, when you watch her, you're not going, wow, she's just good for a female. You're like, no, she's just that good. And then I think I had this presence about me because I actually debuted with my dad as my manager.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I'm either going to sink or swim. And having Ric Flair beside you as one of the greatest of all time, like, I wanted the attention on me. So I'm like, how am I going to ooze that confidence and charisma for people to go, actually, she's standing out, not her dad? And that was either, you know, it was probably the greatest learning experience having my dad out there, because either he was gonna overshadow me or not. And I think people were just like, wow, she's just, you either have the it factor or you don't. And when I first started, I did not have the it factor.
Who, like, you know, you remind me of Rock, because I've met Rock about three times. You know, you really do. So
you.
I met Rock behind the scenes years ago at the place I used to work, ESPN. It was about 8-9 years ago. And I did an interview with him, and he was just getting into Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my producer, I'm like, boy, that guy's got it. I said, you know, it's the look, it's the smile. It's a now, by the way, so when you walk through a room, I see you before you come on the air, I'm like, you have an it quality. But there's a difference between, at some point, you had to buy into it.
I had to buy into that. So my dad always told me the most important part of your segment is the minute you walk through the curtain. If you don't believe in yourself, the audience isn't going to believe in yourself.
Great advice.
And even when I'd be sitting backstage, I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I feel like I'm going to faint. I don't remember my match. I don't know. Like, how do you be the queen? And like, sometimes I still go, gosh, how am I going to be that badass that walks through the curtain? Because I don't feel like that every single day. But it's just when that music hits and I walk through, I'm like, I know I'm that good. I just, that grew with me. And having that confidence, what I did was like, okay, I created this character and this woman that I wanted to be like in my personal life, and I never forgot that. And so, like, here is this queen that's confident, that's independent, that, you know, is standing out in a male-dominated world. And that was just the message I wanted to send to everyone. So I just, like, play that over and over in my mind.
Now, what's your current relationship with Becky Lynch?
Number one doesn't talk about number two.
That's what I thought it was. So there is clearly, now she is an antagonizer. She likes to get under your skin. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah. And you are the current champion. And the number two is likes to poke.
Well, she's the champion right now.
Okay. But yeah, you're viewed as, it's fair to
say. See, I'm a champion whether I have the title or not.
Well, I would say there's a quality to you. No, I mean, I would say there's a quality to you. As Hulk wasn't always the champion,
yeah,
but he was always the Hulk.
Yes.
Do you feel that she is jealous of you?
Okay, are we talking on script or off script?
Both. That's okay. It all melts into one.
So, Becky and I call ourselves Thelma and Louise. This roller coaster that we've been on professionally and personally makes us who we are today. I needed the man to be the queen, and she needed the queen to be the man. And I don't want to use the word jealousy, but there is such a competitive nature to both of us. I want to be the best. She wants to be the best. And that's very important to have in this business, because once you're at that point where, okay, well, I don't want to be on top anymore. If you don't want to be on top, then you're in the wrong place.
By the way, the next WrestleMania is WrestleMania what? 30? What is the next WrestleMania? 36?
Well, wait, Tampa or LA? Which one?
Which LA is next, isn't it?
No, well, we have Tampa in April 5th. And then LA that we just announced next year.
Now, that will be at the stadium.
Yes.
At SoFi.
That is our fourth year to LA.
So that'll be 80,000 people.
Yes.
That is unbelievable. Like, I watched the movie not long ago, Bohemian Rhapsody. It was about the movie of Queen, speaking of the Queen. And they were showing Freddie Mercury performing at Wembley Stadium. And mm-hmm. they had the camera from behind him. I watched that and I thought, oh, my God. I talk to Joy, I get nervous. This is so has there ever been a moment in your career so far when you walked out, what has been the most electrifying arena?
So my first WrestleMania was at, well, the first one I performed at, because I was actually in Triple H's entrance 2 years prior at the San Jose stadium, but AT&T Stadium, 101,000 people.
What is it like?
To be able to control the emotions of 101,000 people, I mean, there's nothing like it. Like now, you know, I was really hard on my dad when he went through that period when he retired from WWE. He just couldn't, you know, hang up the boots.
Of course.
He, you know, made some different choices, came out of retirement. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, I did not get it. I'm like, you have spent your entire life dedicating and sacrificing yourself to this industry. Just quit. Like, dad, just like take the time off, be a dad, be a husband, just do something, get a hobby. So now that I'm in his shoes,
yeah,
I get it. Like, I can't imagine the day comes where they say that I can't perform and be the queen again. Because, like, when you're in that ring, and whether you're the good guy or the bad guy, it's
juice.
There's nothing like it. And, like, I will say this, though. It's, like, harder to speak in front of 10 people than it is to wrestle in front of that many.
And that's a perfect out. It is Charlotte Flair, the queen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was worth every second.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Rick Bucher joining us. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. Bukes has been covering the NBA since the early 90s. He's my buddy. All right, here we go. This is a really good time in the NBA because now it's your trading deadline's done. You know, players, you're stuck with where you're at. So you got the bottom line, the tape don't lie. You got to play hard. Everybody's stuck with everybody now.
Right.
You know, before the trading deadline, you can call out the coach. There's a lot of game.
Main pieces. There's still potential for a buyout here or there. You could add a piece. But as far as the core, you are correct.
Okay, so let's go. I had Mark Medina on earlier. Okay. And he said something interesting. He said, listen, because I like the Clippers, the way they're the construct of the Clippers. But he said, listen, they're not practicing a lot together. Mm-hmm. The load management. He said, now you got Marcus Morris, another piece. He goes, you know, they really haven't played together very much, whereas the Lakers, by not moving Kuzma,
right,
have really found a nice chemistry. Mm-hmm. When I size up the Clippers and Lakers to you today,
yeah,
who you got in the series and why today?
Well, if they play today?
Today
would be the Lakers' best chance of making it happen. I still don't think that they would win. And we've seen that from the two times that they've played each other. The Clippers have the wherewithal that when they decide to play and they put everybody out there, they're just a better team. They're a deeper team. The work that Anthony Davis has to do and the number of bodies that the Clippers can throw at him
And LeBron
is going to wear them down. They match up with what the Lakers have as well or better than anybody else in the league. And they have the kryptonite. They have the antidote. Most people don't have the requisite size and athleticism and defensive mentality to match up with both Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
That's where I think Utah is.
The Clippers do.
Yeah, Utah's got everything. They can't match up with LeBron.
Exactly. You have to have a dominant small forward. It's why the Warriors fell off so precipitously and why they were so good before. Because against the small forwards, the best small forwards, we can throw Kevin Durant at you. We can throw Andre Iguodala at you. We can throw Klay Thompson at you. We can throw multiple quality defenders at the heart of what you do. That's what made them special. And when all those guys are gone, now you don't have that thing. It's why you go get Andrew Wiggins, because he at least fits the prototype.
He's an athletic wing who can defend.
At that position, at the small forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the Marcus Morris deal, I didn't know if the Lakers wanted him, but I knew they didn't want him with the Clippers. It felt like to me the Lakers were like, okay, you got Patrick Beverley, you got Kawhi and Paul, you got a bunch of guys you can throw at LeBron. The Lakers are smart enough to go, we don't need another guy you can throw at LeBron.
Yeah.
And so to me, did the Lakers want Marcus Morris or did they just not want him on the Clippers?
They wanted him and they did not believe that the Clippers were going to get him.
Wow.
And they didn't think that they had to give up Kyle Kuzma to get him because there is a beef between Jim Dolan and Steve Ballmer about the building of the arena that Steve Ballmer wants to build a mile away from the Forum.
And the
guess who owns the Forum?
James Dolan.
So Dolan has filed lawsuits. He's doing everything he can to stop that. The Lakers were convinced, the Knicks aren't trading Marcus Morris to the Clippers. They're not dealing with them. They've got a beef going on. They're not going to help the Clippers. Jim Dolan doesn't want to help the Clippers. We know how the personal vendettas that Jim Dolan has, right? I mean, it's understandable that the Lakers would think that way. So they didn't – I don't know if they ever really intended to put Kyle Kuzma in the deal. My thought is probably not. But they let the Knicks believe until the 11th hour that they would put Kuzma in the deal. And then, last second, they said, we'll give you Danny Green in 2 seconds. Thinking there's no way they're going to the Clippers. This is all they got. They're not going to go anywhere now, and Dolan wants to move Morris. And the Knicks said – no, we'll go do a deal with the Clippers. Watch us.
Wow.
So Clippers did want to get another body in that rotation because, honestly, if you're playing against JaVale McGee and LeBron James and Anthony Davis, adding there – I mean, look, they don't want to leave anything to chance. They want to make sure that they have everything that they need in their arsenal no matter who they face. And Marcus Morris – look, if I was the Lakers, I would have given up Kyle Kuzma. Yeah. Because, no, look, I understand how talented he is and what his potential is. But you don't know what he is as a playoff player. Marcus Morris has been in the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years. He's played 30 minutes. He's averaged 30 minutes in 32 games. He shoots over 40% from three in the playoffs. And oh, by the way, he's played alongside stars in those playoff games. So he's been that efficient and effective not being a central piece. He knows how to fill this role. He would have been the ideal piece in my mind if you're really going for it, if the Lakers are really going for
it. But here's the problem. If you get Marcus Morris, and I keep saying this, almost everybody I respect, you included, doesn't think the Lakers could beat the Bucks or the Clippers. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're probably third, and I think they would struggle. I think there are certain teams that could give them, you know, I do think Denver could be a matchup problem. I think Utah can be problematic, stretch them to 6 games in a playoff series. If they don't win this year,
yeah,
what are they next year if they trade Kuzma? They're just old and expensive. I mean, this is what happens with LeBron. Like, Doug Gottlieb always says this. There's always that kid in the neighborhood you invite through to the party, and all the kids love him. He leaves, the house is a mess.
Right.
Lamps are broken. Everybody is sick. LeBron leaves a franchise.
Yes.
He demands you get old and expensive.
Yes.
And then LeBron leaves.
Yes.
And you're done.
I understand that. And I understand where if you're playing a slightly longer game and you're waiting for Kuzma to develop and he gets some playoff experience and he shows you what you can be, maybe that's the case. But there is the assumption then that Anthony Davis isn't going anywhere or that what you do this year isn't going to impact his decision. Like if they get knocked out early, does Anthony Davis look at it and say, well, okay, so we're waiting on Kuzma to get better?
You don't think he'd leave. Anthony's not leaving L.A.
I for everything that I've seen with his relationship with LeBron, I would tend to think not. Yes, the relationship is great. But I also know that there are people in Anthony Davis's camp who believe that he should be the star and that he should be the star in a big market. And there are going to be a couple teams in really big markets that are going to afford him that opportunity should he so choose to go that direction.
Okay, we talked about this yesterday. So the key, I'm going to tell you the key to the next dynasty in the NBA.
Okay.
Is Chris Middleton. Okay, now just listen. You think this is crazy. Look at your reaction.
Joy?
Okay.
I agree because I know where he's going.
Okay, now acknowledge this. Acknowledge this. Mm-hmm. That if Giannis goes to the Warriors with Steph and Klay and Draymond,
yes,
they are winning this title. They are going to be an unbelievable basketball team.
Okay.
Okay. Giannis is going to stay in Milwaukee.
I agree.
If he goes to the finals, because they're eventually going to win. But Chris Middleton disappeared about every third playoff game last year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and Middleton doesn't deliver and they can't get past a veteran, long, well-coached Toronto or a younger but more, I think a little more athletic Boston team with Brad Stevens, and it's because Giannis is dropping 38
right.
and 17 rebounds and Middleton disappears in 2 games, I'm Giannis, I am out. I am done. I'm not waiting on a Texas A&M second round guy to become Kawhi. If Middleton doesn't deliver in these plays, because last year, you guys kept telling me, oh, it's Middleton. I'm like, yeah, every third game he pops.
Right.
He disappeared. If Chris Middleton disappears in the Eastern Conference Finals and Giannis is dropping 38 and 17, he's not sticking around. I can get Klay, Steph, Draymond, and me. I'm not losing a series for 4 years.
I was not, first of all, don't put me in with the you guys, because I was not singing Chris Middleton's praises to you. We can go back and check the tape. I like your theory. I believe that it is misguided when it comes to Giannis Antetokounmpo. I feel as if he is one of those guys who feels beholden to Milwaukee because he feels they built him as much as he built them. I'm saying, I don't believe that he's just going to go running to the most ideal spot. He didn't come up in the AAU culture. He didn't come up in the U.S. culture. He's not built that way. So I don't expect that to be the difference. And this is the one other issue that I have, because this reminds me of all the talk with LeBron in Cleveland. Oh, they can't get LeBron any help in Cleveland. Oh, if they'd only get some players around him in Cleveland. LeBron wasn't everything that he could be in Cleveland. That was as much a factor. And if the Bucks fall short, It won't be all on Chris Middleton. It will be at least in part because Giannis Antetokounmpo wasn't able to do everything that his physical ability should allow him to do. His game will not have matured to the point where he understands how to win. Because whether it's Chris Middleton or anybody else, he has enough around him that if he is everything that he can be, they can win a championship. I'm just not sure he's at that point yet.
So you think they play Boston wouldn't be able to stop him. So he would drop. No. He would go 36 and 16.
Yeah.
But Boston's too good that alone will beat them. So Middleton has to drop 24 four times in a series. He can't just, because we know Giannis is not going to be stopped by Boston. They don't have the personnel in the front court to stop him.
Correct.
So he's going to put up great MVP series numbers.
Right.
But that alone is not beating Boston. By the way, that alone's not beating Toronto, but I think they'll defend him more arduously than Boston could. They have more length.
Toronto is the real kryptonite for Giannis in the Eastern Conference.
I think I just blew your mind that Chris Middleton is the key to the next five-year dynasty in this league.
You routinely blow my mind. I don't know if this rises to that level that this one does.
By the way, you know I had Charlotte Flair on earlier?
Yeah.
When she walks into the studio,
yeah,
the temperature changed.
Yeah.
You should watch that WWE stuff. I'm not kidding you.
I'm all over it. I also watched the XFL.
What'd you make of it?
I was duly impressed. I was really impressed. And I got to tell you, I think they're going to be disruptors. Hearing the plays, hearing everybody mic'd up, hearing that exchange. Like the NFL has always had a closed gate when it comes to all that. I found that fascinating.
How about the transparency on the replay?
Yes.
Right behind the guys.
Yes.
Yeah, look at that. Go to that.
It was all good. In fact, there was a later, I think they had a technical difficulty because there was a later game, the Guardians game maybe,
yeah,
where you couldn't hear everything. I was like, hey! Where is it?
I was impressed too.
Yeah. No, I thought it was well done. Look, I thought the AAF was good football. It just drove me crazy. I didn't know where to find it. The beauty of this is
it's all over the place.
Saturday and Sunday, major networks. Well done.
Can you imagine if Chris Middleton ever watched this show? He'd be like, who's that jerk? I mean,